Hello, and welcome to Season 2 of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee. Coffee and Code is here to help bridge the gap between technology and people through each informative episode. On this show, you'll hear exclusive interviews with experts and innovators in the tech space. No matter your level of expertise or ability, I believe you can be excited, informed, and empowered to learn how the rapidly evolving tech world impacts your daily life. Subscribe to Coffee and Code to be notified when new episodes go live. You can also find me on Twitter at AshleyCoffee_ and on Instagram at AshleyRCoffee89. Thanks for listening, and welcome to Coffee and Code. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Coffee and Code. I'm your host, Ashley Coffee. I'm excited to have a really awesome guest on the show with us today. He is multifaceted. He is a data visualization expert, and his name is Travis Tester. You're going to talk about data and why it's important and how it can empower people to visualize data in their lives. So, Travis, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashley. I'm really happy to be here. And real quick, before we begin, I'd like to give a shout out to Rebecca behind the scenes for helping out. Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Rebecca. Snaps to Rebecca. For those of you listening, Rebecca is my assistant. She's amazing. I do a lot of things and I couldn't do a lot of what I do without her. So thanks,
that's
Rebecca.
Right.
Thanks for
that's
the shout right. out there.
For sure. And also want to say I'm just a big fan of the name of the podcast, Coffee and Code.
Oh,
I drink
well, thank you.
Like a pot of coffee a day.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Yes. You're a brand advocate. Someone told me recently that I should call the listeners coffee beans. What do you think about that?
I can dig it. I can dig it for sure.
Like Lady Gaga's little monster has got coffee beans.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, we turn coffee into code. And you know, yeah. I have the lamest tech joke is in the morning when I get my coffee, I say, installing Java. And then all my IT coworkers just laugh and roll their eyes at me. So, yeah. Mm. Anyways, I'm glad to be here, Coffee and Code. It's been a long time coming and just want to say hi to all the listeners.
Thank you, Travis. I'm so excited for you to be on here because data visualization isn't really a topic that I've dove into on the show, and you're the perfect person for this. Data visualization is just a whole world. I subscribe to the subreddit Data is Beautiful mm-hmm. and a lot of other things, and I think that subreddit really convinced me the power of data visualization. So before we kind of dive in, Travis, can you tell us a little bit more about yourself?
Yes, I currently work as a data analyst for a company called MyCare Integrated Software Solutions. They're based here in Oklahoma City. And prior to that, I formerly taught at the Oklahoma City University over there on 23rd and Blackwelder in the studio design department. I taught a lot of graphic design courses, publication courses, also web development and web design. And I also, before that, taught at UCO and their fine arts department as well. And I taught a lot of like business management and digital media type courses. So pretty much an Adobe instructor for 5 years or so for a lot of that and some other technologies in there as well.
That's awesome. So I feel like you saw a lot of technology change during your course of teaching, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and then even just as a student too, and then just a lot of that was with social media and, you know, watched all the, you know, creative cloud products develop over a decade as a student and an educator there. And web design's come a really long way as well. You know, Webflow is super cool. I'm not really using Squarespace or Wix or any of those other players anymore. So yeah, lots of different shifts have happened. Different screen sizes.
yeah, right?
Lots of really cool new tech has happened the last decade. And the one coming up is going to be even crazier.
We really are on the doorsteps of the fourth industrial revolution. And I feel like it's like, ooh, it's going to explode. It's going to be exciting.
Be driven by AI and data.
Exactly, which is why it's important to understand that data, because everything that we do has a data point attached to it. I heard a wild statistic the other day that it wasn't data points, but it was like the amount of like marketing messages we get every day. It's 10,000.
Yeah, that blew my mind too. And I was like, no way. And then I woke up and I started trying to like count throughout the day. I was like, yeah, it's probably true.
Yeah, it's wild. So Travis, you've told us a little bit more about yourself. Now tell us a little bit more about what you do. Like, what does your day-to-day look like? What are your things that you're diving into data visualization wise?
Yeah. So my work as a healthcare analyst has been super, has a lot of variety to it. So predominantly the most of this year I've been working on cannabis related data for all the testing labs in the state of Oklahoma. Making sure that they are being able to detect certain analytes in the product that they're able to, and trying to keep the quality assurance of that product high for cannabis consumers within the state. But I do other types of work too, but on the day in and day out, build a lot of dashboards within a program called Tableau, which is owned by Salesforce. Really powerful business intelligence tool. Its competitor is Microsoft Power BI, if you've heard of that one as well. So those are kind of the two players when it comes to visualizing your data in a business setting for an organization. So if you're looking to, grab some new skills, that's a great tool to put on your belt, Tableau. Super big fan of it. It's changed my life learning how to use Tableau. But I also that's do a lot huge. Of, yeah, it's super, it's gaining a lot of popularity, and it's really fun. Kind of a fun tool to use. It can be a little wonky sometimes, but
true.
That's but most programs,
if you know
right?
It, then right. you just have so much possibilities. But I want to say, like, if anyone's listening, if you want job security, get a certification in Tableau or Power BI in your set.
Yeah, you kind of are for sure. It's highly sought out skill. Data analyst is kind of an entry point into data, the world of data, and SQL, Tableau, those are the things that recruiters are looking for. Absolutely. But other than that, I do get to use a lot of UX and UI design in my day-to-day. So I use Adobe XD for that. That helps a lot in designing dashboards and digital products for data-driven products, like a lot of apps, softwares as a service, which is, SaaS, and then, web design and then web development, things like that, that are like kind of the front end of data entry, for certain websites and things like that. And then we also get to do a little bit of programming and coding as well. R and Python are in the mix, and obviously some
great languages.
SQL. Yes, shout out to both of those. And obviously tons of meetings and stand-ups and agile sprints and discovery, and that takes up a lot of my day as well. But it's always fun. You're either designing, developing. Lately, what I've been learning is Snowflake, the database. Yes, Data Lake Warehouse. It can do it all. It's a really impressive technology. It's super easy to use. So I'm starting to get into data engineering a little bit as well. Wow. And trying to be able to stand up databases, load data in by creating like pipelines. Ooh. And then hooking up Tableau to those databases and then visualizing it. So I'm starting to shift from, doing data analyst and data engineer work is kind of where my day-to-day kind of looks like right now.
Question for you, would that be similar to Quartz Composer, where basically building a dashboard out of like different circuits of information?
Yeah, very similar. Wow. Very similar.
Good to know.
And so that's a little bit about what I do, or what I, the day-to-day looks like, and what I've been doing this year. And I got some really cool work that I think you're going to find really interesting coming up. I can tell a little bit about. So there's a lot of community, there's a lot of mental health clinics here in the state of Oklahoma. As we know that like our education's not very good. We don't got a lot of funding for mental health, and, some parts of the state are also very like poor. Mm-hmm. So we have definitely a mental health problem within the state.
Crisis. Just
yeah.
Crisis, because it is a crisis.
We could say that for sure. And so a couple years ago, on a federal level, you might know about this actually, and we might start jamming and talking a lot about this, but there was an initiative and kind of a program that was created to help. I think there was maybe 13 states that signed up kind of as the beta trial test run. And what they are doing is they are reporting with data on 9 specific measures called QCI, continuous quality, improvements, essentially. And mental health clinics that report on these 9 and meet a couple other criterias can apply at a federal level to get this designation called a CCBHC, which is a certified community behavioral health center or clinic. And Oklahoma is one of those states that's in this program. And a lot of
Oh my gosh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes. And so this is what most of my work revolves around, Ashley. Is like this kind of is this kind of stuff.
It's amazing. What fulfilling work. Wow.
It's pretty cool. And if I left education, it was like I want to do something where I can still like make an impact. Right. That was definitely
huge.
A criteria. And so these mental health clinics, as you can guess, they just don't have the skilled technical IT workers as far as like data professionals go within their companies to maybe achieve this CCBHC. So we have like my company that I work for is a DCO. It's a designated collaborating organization that is going to work with a lot of the mental health clinics in the state of Oklahoma to set up reporting on their data. And that's going to be done through Tableau and dashboarding to report on these 9 measures to the federal government. And then they should be able to receive funding in pretty much direct relation to their reporting. And we're going to help them get these kind of certifications so they can become CCBHCs and give Oklahomans better care through mental health.
That is incredible. And also I want to talk about the benefit of like job creation there too, because I have a feeling that a lot of people will learn from this process, whether that's learning how to, you know, input data or learning a new programming skill. Like that right there, I think is really powerful, kind of like a nice cycle in a positive way. That's really good to know. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Yeah. And I can't, you know, share too much about that, like on the day to day, just because it's so much PHI kind of information, HIPAA and things like that. But it's nice to talk about like the overall project and like, you know, the 30,000 view foot of it up in the, you know, overhead and things like that.
100%. And for everyone listening that's maybe in Canada or in another country, Oklahoma is smack dab in the middle of the United States. And we're not really highly ranked in education, but we're working on it and working on mental health as well. And the good news is that in the USA, we have a new mental health lifeline. It's the 988 line. So if you or someone that you know is experiencing a mental health crisis, 988 is a good line that will get you connected immediately to resources and get you help. So wanted to put that out there. But Travis, this is amazing. And I feel like I could have an hour long conversation with you or more, but I want to kind of circle back around to how did you get involved in the world of data visualization? Can you tell us that story?
Yeah, that's a great question. And hopefully, some of your listeners find it inspiring. I would assume most of them are going to probably be a technical crowd, but if you do have listeners who are maybe a little bit more low tech or low code or not as savvy with the tools, definitely inspiring story. So I was teaching at the time. I believe I was on both campuses for a while. I was teaching simultaneously at one school during the day and then going to the other college campus at night to teach night courses.
Wow.
And yes, and it was really fun before obviously like, you know, C-19 kicked up, and then like as the pandemic progressed, it just wasn't like as enjoyable. And you know, just enrollment was down and just, you know, class sizes were down. And the one of the presidents at UCO, or the president at UCO, had a big meeting with all of the departments, would call us in at it's funny, we actually did on Zoom because it was like, you know, middle of pandemic. But we would meet with all the professors, university chairs and heads, and then like the president themselves. And she kind of just came to each department one by one in a different Zoom meeting. Was like kind of explaining, and you could look it up. I mean, UCO has been having some serious budget issues for a while. And she kind of like tipped us off to that. She said, you know, just like budget's not looking good, and wasn't saying a lot of us were about to get fired, but like I could kind of read between the lines. And I was adjuncting at that time, so I was nervous. I was lower maybe on the totem pole. And so before just finding out and just like getting axed one day, I was like, I need to be proactive and look for something new. And so literally the next day I'm on LinkedIn and I see that Google had just released all these new professional certifications. Literally that week, I think it was like Wednesday when I was on LinkedIn, and they dropped on Monday. And so they offer them through Coursera. And I think originally they had only an IT kind of professional or support. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. And that was like the first one that they did. And then after they released a whole bunch more: UX design, data analytics, project management, and Android development. Those were the four that they dropped that one week.
Wow.
And I was a graphic designer, so I probably should have went into UX design, but mm-hmm. I looked at all of the courses and saw that data analytics paid the best, and so that's the one that I enrolled in.
Wow.
And so the next day I was on my way to becoming a data analyst through that Google Analytics certificate, and that was through Coursera.
Wow.
And I had some data entry experience in Excel before that. And to be honest, I kind of thought it was a little bit lame. I really didn't enjoy it. And then I got to the chapter on Tableau, and then I realized that we could visualize data. And that's what kind of helped me push through the certificate and the specialization, because working in just spreadsheets wasn't really doing it for me. And then we got to SQL, and super fun language for sure. But you know, it's just select from where. It's pretty much the
so
language.
Interesting.
And so, wow. Yeah. And I really wasn't having that fun with like the right, you know, or whatever the side that's the more like logical one. I was wanting that like creativeness as a graphic designer. And once they showed me Tableau, and I was like, oh, I can do this, because I can take the business acumen and kind of combine it with graphic design and really help businesses like move the needle. And that's really what hooked me in. And that's how I got into the world of tech, and was really through that Google Data Analytics course.
That's such a cool origin story.
Yeah. And it's kind of crazy. I mean, I've always been a tech kid. I grew up in the country where like we didn't have neighbors, and I didn't really like to play outside. So I was like gaming and like always on the computer as soon as we got internet and things like that. But I was never like a script kind of like kitty, or, you know, never did command line stuff. Essentially, it was always kind of just like someone who liked to either create on the computer or just use it to entertain themselves. So, you know, a lot of millennials can probably relate to that as far as being like kind of techie just because they used it. And so I just had to kind of learn how people were making these things, and started to learn like just a little bit of computer science basics as well. But yeah, I'm a certificate specialization kind of kid that came up, and you know, I'm making double what I was as an educator a year ago, which is crazy.
That is wild. I love the story for so many reasons, and thank you for sharing it.
Yeah, my wife is retiring next week.
Hey, that's exciting. Congrats to your wife.
Yeah,
bravo.
She's quitting. I got a raise, so she's heading home.
Congrats. That's awesome. But like, what a great one. You turned a potentially negative situation to a situation where I have the power to change this, and you did. But like, mm-hmm. What a beautiful intersection of graphic design background and data visualization. Like, if I take a step back and think about that, I couldn't think of two more complementary fields.
Yes. And that's the coolest thing about graphic data analytics, is that you got to know kind of a lot of different things, to be honest. And I had a whole bunch of really disparate skills from my past that I was not able to combine in any shape or form to be profitable or valuable to society. And it wasn't until I found this kind of career and profession that I was able to like tie in all those past experiences and like still be able to use things I had learned way long ago, and you know, just kind of bundle it and package it into one nice, you know package or, you know, box, which is really cool. So
Coursera too, like the fact that I feel like the internet obviously has democratized access to knowledge, mm-hmm. and education.
Yes,
and if you want to learn anything,
yes.
You can literally go on the internet and do it. And that's what you did. And I love that.
Yes. Education should be free. It's weird. I was a teacher for so long, and I just did not like the fact that there was this application process and you had to have a bunch of money, and the class sizes were at a certain place, a physical place with a physical cap on it. And in my opinion, like, you know, information should be available to all, and the classroom should be you know, not have walls, and it shouldn't cost, you know, you shouldn't have to have rich parents or whatever to get that education. So, you know, it's really weird that I taught in college for so long, but I'm such a believer in, you know, more accessible education, like you said, and not gatekeeping on it.
Yeah, shout out to our local libraries, the last physical structure where you're not expected to buy anything and you can freely access information. So if you're listening in the US or actually anywhere, check out your local library, learn some stuff. I really think we're seeing this interesting transition, at least here in the US, of this college education is no longer the same thing that it meant, I would say, 50 years ago, right? You can gain these skills with experience. I mean, there are, of course, going to be certain professions, like if being the medical profession or an accountant, where you do have to have these certifications and experience. But with technology, I think there's more opportunity for people. And especially with hybrid work being here to stay, it provides more opportunity for people to utilize those skills in their home and not have to go into a workspace and be able to control their environment.
Yes, yes. Work is becoming less of this like place you go. It's more of this thing you do, right? I like that.
Yeah, if you're results driven, it doesn't matter where you're physically located.
Yeah. And for those who don't, you know, or haven't checked out Coursera or are unfamiliar with it, a lot of the specializations on there are taught by some of the leading universities. I mean, you got Johns Hopkins on there, you got Harvard and Stanford and Duke and the rest. So you can get a really quality education online for little to nothing, you know, and some of these places even offer education for free. I mean, check out CS50 on YouTube, you know?
Yeah.
Crazy. It's crazy. They give that out for free. That's nuts.
And you just finished it, right? What did you think?
No, I'm like a third through it right now, but it is fantastic. And it has already upped my knowledge of like data, like at a fundamental level, how it's created, how it's stored, how it's moved, those kinds of things.
Nice. Well, this is a good segue for my next question. Did you feel like emerging tech like VR or AR helped you teach DataViz to your students? One thing I want to think about and mention here is Virtualytics. It's a software that I used when I was an emerging tech librarian at OU, and it was literally for data visualization in VR. So did you feel like emerging tech helped you teach?
So I wasn't able to teach something so niche as data visualization to my students. I was a little bit more generalist in my graphic design education, and it was kind of just like the fundamentals of design, essentially. So I didn't get to use a whole bunch of VR and AR like in the classroom. But I do have a cool point that I want to bring up about this topic is like data visualization does have this very tricky kind of scenario where they have to cross this very strange bridge for AR and VR in the future. Let me kind of explain. It's they have a hurdle to overcome with the adoption of this VR and AR tech because like traditionally 3D objects that are rendered or printed in like 2D, there's kind of a negative effect on like the accuracy. I guess it's a perception type thing. So maybe if you can think back to if you've been in Excel and you've seen some of those like really horrible 3D bar charts.
Yes.
We all have seen those, right? It's kind of difficult to find the exact percentage of that bar where if you have them kind of maybe in a row or kind of like stacked forward and back, anything that's, you know, imagine we are in 3D space, a bar chart that's in front of you and one that's a little bit further away from you. The one that's closer to you, even if it's shorter, would appear a little bit bigger, like wider, than something that's further away, which might look smaller, even if it's taller. And so there's definitely like a little bit of a challenge there for data viz into 3D, because I'm really into 3D technology, love Blender and Unity.
What a great freely available tool.
I'm saying, y'all, CS50 is for free, Blender is free, R is free, Python is free. There's no excuses, you know?
True. Crazy. Just got to have time and patience.
Yeah, and that's sometimes time is hard to find. That's for sure.
This is true. But I know in your free time, you like to gameplay, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But before we jump into that, I do think that some of the interaction that will come with VR and XR will allow business owners to get a little bit more of a 360 view of their data. And like, it's kind of literal, you know, you will be. But perhaps being able to zoom in on like coordinates or something like that, if you have like a really tight cluster of data, that could be kind of cool. So I think there will be some awesome use cases for data visualization in that 3D XR, AR type environment. But there's definitely some obstacles and hurdles and accessibility challenges that lay there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's interesting to think about, you know, data visualization in that, you know, 360 way. And I think there needs to be, of course, you have to start with clean data and the foundation. Yes. And I think a lot of institutions have an issue with that. And it's about, you know, focusing on the basics sometimes of the foundation before you take this next step into what is that next thing.
Infrastructure is everything. I mean, like 80% of my job is trying to like collect data and then clean it. And like 20% is the fun part of visualizing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. And I think that with these different types of technologies, if you think about, for example, Tobii eye tracking, they're a known company that makes an eye tracking headset. I don't want to misrepresent the data point here, but it's massive. It is, think of the data points that you get from a phone or a two-dimensional web screen, like, you know, your heat maps of where a person visited a website or looked at. You're gathering the available information off of the sensors on your phone or your device or whatever. And well, with VR, there's so much, there's infinitely more. And as these headset companies are building these technologies, there's more sensors that can gather more data points from you. Like, what button did you press? What was your gaze, your positional gaze? What were you doing? Like, what were you looking at? What did you like look away from? You know, these massive amounts of data points can tell literally everything about me to advertising, right? If someone wants to target me, all the data is there. So I really hope that there's ethical data collection happening in the future. But I worry whenever you've got singular headset manufacturers like Meta being first to market with a consumer, conveniently priced consumer level headset. So yeah, there's just a lot to think about there on data privacy.
Yes. And being marketed at this point is probably the least nefarious use.
True. Very true.
You know what I'm saying? And I mean, real quick, have you seen the video that came out this week that showed this AI camera that was able to it showed people who were taking pictures on Instagram on the street? It was using like a CCTV type thing.
No, send that to me.
Yeah, I will. Cybersecurity friend sent it to me, but it was a pretty much a CCTV, you know, so it was using street cameras, you know, on public streets, and it was some kind of algorithm program that was scanning through Instagram at uploaded pictures of influencers in big cities, and it would look for that photo, and then it would go on the CCTV footage and like pretty much show that individual taking the photo, like as they photo that they post. Yes, it's crazy. Ooh. It's really crazy. So I will send that to you for sure.
Oh my.
That's but when wild. I'm not thinking about doom and gloom, I'm definitely gaming a bit.
Wow. Sorry, I didn't mean to like dive in there so quickly. That's just wild.
Yeah, it is pretty crazy. Oh, they pinpointed it. Yeah, it's startling. God. Startling. Buckle up.
Yeah, you know what? I think about that often of, I don't want to go into a tangent, but whenever you take a photo, right? Just like a random person takes a photo on a plane, on a train, whatever. And if you think about the tertiary data in those photos, like for example, I don't know if anyone is familiar with photogrammetry. Photogrammetry has been around for decades, but it's the process of taking photographs of a space or an object and combining those photographs to generate a three-dimensional model or three-dimensional space. So it's a great thing to use if you're archiving historical places, historical objects. But there are instances where for example, recreations of historical objects or places that have been destroyed, they'll take like crowdsourced photographs from people that have gone on their vacations over the years. Okay. And really recreate something based off of accounts. And they're using the tertiary data from people's random people's photographs to rebuild these things. Isn't that wild?
That is pretty crazy. And they're probably using a lot of different photos to do that. Like a lot of different people's. Right, right.
Tons. Yeah.
Wildness.
Yeah. And I want to mention to everyone listening that we've talked about some resources, and Travis has definitely given some amazing resources to you all today. So I will be including those in the show notes, and we'll mention a little bit more about them a bit further along. But Travis, kind of shifting a little bit here, I want to hear about what exactly that you're working on that you can talk about that's really getting you excited.
Yeah, absolutely. So we are gearing up for that big CCBHC push, like, you know, at my work, which is pretty much the predominant, you know, task on hand, which I know we kind of dived into that as well. You know, but in my spare time, I do enjoy making recently I've been trying to program better on C# and learning Unity software.
Nice.
And so hopefully in the future, you can play some very chill indie games from me. So I'm excited about those projects as well. You know what I'm saying? So, but there is a lot
of a virtual high five for that, because if anyone is listening, another job security is learn Unity.
Yeah, because who knows?
XR development is not going away, and the metaverse is going to be a $30 billion industry by 2025. Isn't that wild?
Yes, and Unity technologies will be at the forefront of that, right?
100%.
Yep.
But Python, your knowledge of Python comes in handy for that too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of Unity programming is in C#, but I mean, Python is like that language of the future that a lot of companies are placing really, really big bets on right now. Mm-hmm. So going all in on Python is definitely never a bad choice, especially in this climate for sure. There has been a lot of really cool innovations, though, in DataViz this year that I'd like to talk about.
Yeah. What are your favorites? Tell us your favorites.
So there is this gentleman named Kirill Binzi, and he's going to have a link in the PDF that I give to Ashley and everyone who's listening to the podcast. So you can go check him out. He has a YouTube channel as well. He's on LinkedIn. But he's a data artist and also an AI researcher. Ooh. Isn't that cool? Yeah. Really cool. Mix. Wow. And so, obviously, he's dealing with really complex, probably big data, and really complex algorithms and big data sets. And he's able to take some of that data and pipe it through certain softwares. And some of these are emerging tech that are generating super crazy, beautiful data art. I mean, I'm talking jaw-dropping, stunning, gorgeous pieces of work. And it's so cool to see how AI, data professionals are starting to create really impressive works of art through data. And it's fantastic. And, you know, we kind of talked about, you know, data is beautiful, the subreddit earlier, where it's a great place to get some inspiration and see some cool stuff. But really awesome to see these AI tools are generating stunning artworks that articulate and decipher, arrays of tones and dots and shapes that are kind of like mapped according to the nature of that data set. And so the artworks are come out really hypnotic, and it's kind of proving that algorithms have a soul.
That's true. I can attest, my husband has been playing with them for quite some time. I'll hear laughs every now and then, like 2 a.m. What are you making? But you jogged my memory of something, and I want to ask you if you saw it. It was an art installation at 21C Museum Hotels. And I took a picture of it because it was a physical mixed media data visualization art piece. And what it was but like a box that was attached to a wall. And what they did is they took like LED fiber optic cables and put it on the inside. And then they piped in certain pieces of data through it.
Okay.
And as the data was coming through, it was represented in changes. So basically you would watch the piece of artwork and it would change colors.
Oh,
and kind of a shape. Cool. Yeah, so, it was wild.
So it was like you were seeing fiber optic cables like transmitting data essentially?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
like really they were doing it by like color visualization.
Oh, that's
but the special. Way that they were layering together made it look like the data was traveling. It was fabulous. I'll have to send you a picture. I was just curious if you happened to see that when it was in town.
I'm not sure if I did, but I've been to the museum. Lovely place. Everyone should go check it out if you're local. But I don't know if I saw that exhibit in particular. So I'd love to see that material if you could forward it over.
For sure, for sure. Well, lastly, before we kind of wrap today, I feel like we should do another podcast episode to talk about this. Maybe I'll do a mini-sode. But Travis, can you tell us what kind of resources would you have for those listening that want to learn more about data visualization?
Yo, absolutely. So check out Coffee and Code for the resource. They'll have all the goodies, but I compiled a PDF for you to browse through, and it's got some of my favorite tools, some really cool data art tools as well in there, tools that I use on the daily. But you also are going to find, and this is probably something I would recommend everyone to do just to brighten up their day with a little bit more beautiful data, is go to Tableau's public page, public.tableau.com. And subscribe to Viz of the Day. Every day you'll get a email sent to your inbox with a really cool visualization that a data viz designer made on Tableau and shared. And you just find some really super interesting stuff of people combining the program of Tableau with graphic design and with data. Like at least, I would say at least 3 to 4 different softwares go into making each one of these visualizations minimum to be likely. But underneath that inbox, underneath that PDF, you're going to see an inbox inspiration with some of my favorite data viz and data related subscriptions to newsletters. So you just go through that list, subscribe to like 8 or 10 different visualization and data newsletters, and you're going to have your finger on the pulse and know exactly what's happening in the community and in the industry at any time. I did also include a couple of my favorite authors for books and just visualizations as well. A lot of female data visualization, data professionals are on there and they're just killing it. I know I mentioned Kirill earlier, but pretty much everyone else on the list is female. And I think there's some really talented ladies out there in the data viz scene. Also, a whole bunch of links to how to get involved if you are a data professional and how to use your skills for good, how to donate maybe some of your data viz or programming or your IT or tech skills to organizations. You're also going to find a couple links on competitions to stay competitive and stay sharp on your data skills, from cleaning data to visualizing it and remaking really bad, horrible visualizations into good ones. So there's all types of things in there to just find community and to brush up on skills or to be inspired, and just a lot of different rabbit holes you can go down with this resource guide that I'm going to give to Ashley.
I love a good rabbit hole, and I'm sure our listeners will as well. Thank you so much for putting that together.
It was my pleasure. And I really want to say thank you for having me on the show and really appreciate your time and let me speak to your audience here on Coffee and Code.
Oh, Travis, thank you. I'm so grateful that our paths have crossed, and I continuously learn something new from you. I feel like each week I follow you on Instagram, and for everyone, I'll put Travis's Insta handle in there so you can follow him as well. But yeah, thank you for everything that you do. Thank you for being a student of life. You know, we're lifelong learners, and for cultivating that knowledge, but also showing and demonstrating that anyone can own their career path if they want to. They've got the keys to it. So thank you for all that you do. And thanks for coming on the show and telling us something new.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me, and have a great night, Ashley.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode of Coffee and Code, share it with a friend. You can also support this podcast by leaving a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and you can also share it on social media. It doesn't matter if you have 5 or 500 or 5,000 followers, you have influence. And lastly, Don't forget to subscribe to be notified when new episodes go live. Thank you so much for listening to Coffee and Code.